Welcome back to the Success is My Religion podcast. We are partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement once again, this time for the HBCU Royal University Queens Second Edition. We will be interviewing the Queens for their next book that's coming out September 30th. I hope you enjoy these episodes. Let me give y'all a little bit of background about Jada. Jada Chris was born in Memphis, Tennessee, March 12th, 1998. She was born to her parents, James Chaney, Ira Chris Sr., and Rhonda Garland. She is the middle sibling of Ira, Nadia, and Ariana Chris. Jada studied business administration with a concentration in supply chain management. She continues her journey with TSU by writing her signature on the world and being an active alumni in the DFW alumni chapter. With a strong work ethic, she has correspondingly managed several extracurricular activities aside from her academics, including executive planning, leader of supply chain management student organization, Alpha Kappa Psi professional business fraternity incorporated, Delta Sigma Theta sorority incorporated, and the university's honors program for she served as a proud member. In addition, Jada has interned at two supply chain governing board partners, including HCA and the Boeing Company. When she isn't giving her time to respective organizations or business endeavors, Jada enjoys trying new coffee shops, traveling, and hanging out with her friends. After graduation, Jada relocated to Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas to pursue her plans of aeronautics sustainment. Although her plate seems full, she keeps God first and values her education as she gives back to the community and uplifts everyone she encounters. During Jada's reign as Miss Tennessee State University, she strived to be a great representation of the young women at TSU while remaining transparent, loving, relatable, and genuine. I hope you enjoy this episode with Jada. I am here with Jada Crisp. She is a HBCU queen, and I am, again, partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement to spread the word about HBCUs and their impact on our society. So Jada, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became a queen.
Yes, so I am Jada Chris, born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee. I studied business administration with a concentration in supply chain management. And immediately after obtaining my bachelor's degree, I relocated to Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, and that's currently where I reside, to start my career in aeronautics. So that's currently what I do. I'm an items analyst kit manager, and I manage parts for aircrafts. So that's my day-to-day job, my 9-to-5. Becoming an HBCU queen is just, it's a life-changing experience. Like, I was the Miss of my high school, the homecoming queen of my high school, but when I became an HBCU queen and the impact that that has in our community, it really changed my life. You know, even now, 2 years later, I tried to hide from it as much as I could, but the crown kept calling me. So I am here now, being a contributing author with this book. And so that's just so exciting. And being an HBCU queen, I mean, there's so many questions you can ask within that one question. But that's
I'm about to ask them.
Yeah.
Go ahead. What did you say?
I was saying that's pretty much the overview. You know, I never realized that HBCU had kings and queens until like I was a late senior in college. And once I did see the queen, I actually saw a picture of Miss State when I was in high school, and I was like, she's so beautiful. But I never had thought in a million years that would be in 4 years. So I saw the reigning queen my freshman year, the night of her coronation, and she came out so beautiful in her coronation gown. And I just went home and I prayed to God, and I said, God, if this is something that you want me to do, then I'll do it. Leave the steps and I will do what you want me to do. And lo and behold, he did. So that's pretty much the backstory of how I decided that I was going to run for queen.
You mentioned the impact in the community. What is the impact in the community? The queen represent to the community to make it an impact?
Yes,
Because you're the
so
first one
I
I
can speak for
heard
myself.
say that.
Well, I can speak for myself because if I have, countless people that love and support me, and I know that they've told me that I've impacted them, that I've impacted my campus. So the impact for me is even if I walk around campus and I just speak to someone, that may lift their head and, help them feel a brighter day. Actually, a student the second semester of Queen, a freshman came up to me. He said, "I only came back to school this semester because you spoke to me every day last year. You had no idea what I was going through, but you made my day better without you knowing." So, an impact to everybody, and also ladies in our on campus and in our communities. Seeing someone in a high position that wears herself well, that dresses well. You don't have to have everything out to look beautiful and to be beautiful, but to also have those beauty and brains. It can inspiration, I think, starts with seeing someone who's already in that role. And then you can work towards that, seeing someone who is successful. Well, how did you get there? Well, here's how I got there. So just being able to pour into anyone that you come across, I think that's impact, on our campus and in our communities.
If you could talk to a young lady that doesn't know anything about like HBCUs or just being like a queen and what that represents and because I look at people that are successful that I can model, so how would a young lady model being a queen right now? Because our teens and our young ladies are in a generalized, but there's
I'm gonna say it's
some
they're changing. The times are changing.
So
So
how could they model what who you are or what you represent now? Because I think that's a big thing, because how you portray yourself and the perspective that others see you is huge in our world, and I don't think they understand that. Because I'll just tell you a story about from today. I'm an educator, so I work with high school students, mostly juniors and seniors, but so I eat lunch with my college credit kids. I don't like to call them kids, but students, my college credit students. I eat. Two girls were just cussing it up, and I'm like, "Yeah, I gotta watch y'all mouth, like just in front of me, like." And I'm the supervisor.
Because you only get one first impression, no matter how many days you're around someone. So now you have an impression of them, you have a perception of them, and that doesn't go away. You'll always have that in the back of your mind. So I can see that.
I mean,
But
it doesn't matter to me, but I know that like you can't
to
just
someone
act your
else, it could.
You can't just go out into the real world and act that way, act the same way you do with your friends, because you might miss out on opportunities that way.
Opportunities, right? And I definitely agree with you. I'll start with that one first because I think people we don't understand, around what race or what income, tax income bracket. Anything. I think that you should always carry yourself well. I think that you could, like you said, you can go into a room and mess up every opportunity for yourself. You won't even know that someone is watching you. People will always watch you. They will always associate you with things. And so I try even now in corporate, I watch what I say, how I say things, because everyone has a different perception of everything. So, to you, cussing may be okay. Brush it off the shoulder and just don't do it around others. But someone else could look at that and say, how were you raised? And then they go into questioning everything, and so I think that if people realize that it's about your first impression and your last impression, but if they could just realize that that could mess up everything. Those young girls didn't know that you probably could have gotten them a scholarship to college, or you could have done something for them that now you may not trust them, just as much, all because you know that they can't hold a conversation, especially in front of an adult. So I think that that is very important. But just for a young lady to model a queen, I think with leading with love first is like the best thing you can do, because I just think that some people might not get love. Some people may not know how to accept love or whatnot. But if you lead with love, I think everything else will follow. I think that if you're kind, the way you speak, just going back to the young custom, that all matters. People look at you, they look at what you have on. I think dressing well is a form of good manners, but just leading with love and loving yourself, because I feel like if you love yourself enough, you wouldn't do all that cussing and stuff to someone else, or you wouldn't wear your skin out so much or whatnot. So I think leading with love, dressing well, whatever that may be for you. And I also think just to realize what crowd is good for you. As queen, I can kind of had to be like a neutral person for my campus, and I could be because I remember where I came from and I remember where I would like to go. But I definitely say that the young like everyone should be cognizant of what's around you. Again, it goes back to who's watching you. So I think definitely leading with love, dressing well, whatever that for you. I just don't think that, as young women, we don't have to put ourselves out there. I think less is always more. So.
It is always more. It is always more. Guys want to see the all right, we want to have something for the imagination, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like we want to leave something for the imagination. And it's funny that, like, and this might be off topic or whatever, but it's kind of like women are dressing and doing all the things that they do for other women and not
For
potential
themselves.
mates. Yeah.
Sure, that too. Yeah.
And what'd you say?
I was gonna say that too, because it's all like I understand what you're saying, because I'm not, no offense to any Atlanta listeners. I love Atlanta. I have a great time every time when I go to Atlanta. But to Atlanta to me is like everybody's worried about, oh, she has this bag on, or this is the new bag they have on, or new pair of shoes. And I do agree that sometimes as women, we do get caught up of trying to impress other women or trying to portray that we're on this level, and we may not be in actuality. But I definitely agree. I've never heard a man say that, but I definitely agree with what you said, Michael. That's
Me and my
a
friends
good
talk about it
point.
all the time. We be like, I mean, we don't like that stuff. We like, what is going
Yeah.
on? You
Y'all
know,
are more for natural, I guess, sometimes.
what'd you say?
I was gonna say, you guys, some men are more for natural sometimes. I can't speak for all, but some men are more for natural.
I just like the I'm around women a lot because I'm a group fitness instructor and I was raised by all women. So, and most of the women that I life are most of the people that I've life coached so far have been women. So it's like a passion of mine to see them excel. And I know black women are kind of like at the bottom of the totem pole, even though like we black women are highly educated and all that stuff. But as far as socially, it seems like, and this is just my race and totem pole, white men at the top, white women, you know, all, down the line, black women have been left out. And just seeing you as a queen and the queens and how you carry yourself and like that is a real example. And I want to hone that and be able to teach it myself from a perspective of a male. Like, hey, this is how you carry yourself. This is an example of how you can walk throughout life, because no matter who we are writing a story, and everybody that we come into contact with is writing us or is seeing that story play itself out,
Exactly.
and they have a
Exactly.
perspective on that story. How do you want that perspective to be? And being the queen, like,
Yeah.
is there like pressure being once you become a queen? And can you kind of speak on how you actually become a queen? Because is it like your senior year, or like what are the kind of requirements?
Yeah, so in different universities, I know it's different because I've seen like some juniors or some sophomores year run, but at Tennessee State, it's mainly seniors. You have to have enough credit hours. Your grades have to be in good standing, of course. You have to be of good character. It's like a whole list that you have to. You can never be married, never be pregnant. So they kind of want like the ideal first lady. I kind of like you could be the first lady of your HBCU. So of course, good standing in grades, good standing in character, of course, good standing in your criminal background, of course. But you have to campaign. Like it's just like running for a government position. It's a week long of campaigning. You have to earn your votes pretty much. You don't just wake up and be a queen because you're pretty. You have to work for those votes and show people that you're a well-rounded young lady, that you know how to go in any room or sit at any table on any stage and really be able to represent your university and also every young lady that's so that's pretty much how you become a queen. I know every school have like a campaign, it's like a student election commission, in which that is kind of ran like the government almost. So
So you have to be
yeah.
aware of all that, because I talk to students every single day. I'm in like I'm in an urban district, and these students think a lot. Like, they have ideas about what things are, and I'm trying to get them to know
Focus,
because we
yeah.
have Google. We have Google. You can Google almost anything and kind of get a synopsis of what it is actually with facts and stuff. I'm not saying everything on Google is right, but like, if you want to explore wages or, requirements for different things like
Right.
that, you can go on Google and be like, what are the requirements to be HBCU queen? And I'm guarantee you that there's a whole bunch of things that comes up.
Right. Yes. And it'll probably come up, just as like the national positions of being a queen, like Miss America or Miss Nigeria, like anything like that. They'll still pretty much have the same requirements. Of course, they'll be a little different, but they'll pretty much have the same requirements as those as well.
So what, why was how did you choose a HBCU? Do you have a family lineage that has been to HBCUs?
So no, not really. Now that I think about it, my older sister actually graduated from HBCU, but she had went through like so many PWIs before she got there. But that wasn't my deciding factor. I always knew that I wanted to go to a historically black college and university, and I knew that I wanted to be close to home. So I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. So Memphis is kind of like you either go to TSU or JSU. And I knew that I wasn't going to Jackson, Mississippi. I don't know. I just didn't want to go to JSU. So when I was running for the position in high school of homecoming queen, you had to write down a college. So at that time, TSU had already accepted me. And so once I wrote it down in black and white, it pretty much got real for me, and I just stuck with TSU. And now I realize that God really ordered my steps there, and that was the right place for me. So, and HBCU was always my choice. I never switched up.
And what was your experience at TSU?
Oh my goodness. How long do we have? I'm just kidding. But my experience, I think my freshman year, I was trying to get on your own. It's like, okay, you don't have parents that's here with you. You don't have a curfew. It's kind of just like living this adult life. And it's weird because you're 18, 17 years old coming out of high school. So I pretty much just worked through my freshman year. I went to a few campus events. I saw like what kids could be. or whatnot. And then my sophomore year was really when I got engaged. So I joined a business fraternity, and then I became a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated and supply chain. Like, I got so involved my sophomore year. So things got busy for me really quick. I then went on to my junior year, where I was just enjoying being a Neo, enjoying being a Delta, enjoying just enjoying campus, enjoying being an upperclassman or whatnot. And that was also the year that I decided that I was going to run. So that second semester of my junior year, I ran for Miss TSU. But an HBCU experience is like none other. And you went to a PWI, so you can like pretty much see how things go over here, and you know how things go over there. So
I didn't quite go to a PWI.
where did you go?
My school was a sports school, so we had like it was majority like black and brown people from all
Okay,
over the
so
place.
okay, well, you kind of went
But
up
it was a
then.
sports school.
No, I get it. Okay.
But I did go a year at Iowa State, and
Oh, okay.
I grew up in a all white high school and went to all white church and all that stuff. So like I understand the differences. That's why I do what I do. You know what I mean?
Yes,
Because
and I totally understand it.
I had to navigate the waters to get to this point, and it was tough. Like I ain't gonna lie.
Yeah.
Like I had to learn some lessons over there. And yeah, so keep it. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, so my apologies. I know you kind of went to a PWI for 1 year, but you from that 1 year, a lot of my PWI friends, they used to come to TSU and just be with us. They would come to our events, come to hang out with us. They were like, this is how y'all, this is how y'all react over, how y'all act over here. So a lot of my friends, they wish that they kind of had the HBCU experience. And not just for the partying and for the culture or whatnot. Also with like the small, we have, I think when on the HBCU campus, it's like you have an increased level of engagement. You have more interactions with faculty and staff. There are smaller classes. So if you take your education serious, it can be whatever you want it to be. A lot of my PWI friends, they're like, I've never met the president of my college. I'm like, I used to sit right next to her. Like, I loved Atlanta. So I think with the PWI, you might get high visibility from the rest of the world, but I think with the HBCU, it really nurtures you and pours into you, so that you may go out and conquer the remainder of the world.
Talk about the confidence it gives you, because there's something different about being taught by your own. So there's some things that I can pour into my black and brown students that white teachers can't, because our
They'll take heed
school,
to you. Yeah.
huh? Yeah.
I was gonna say they'll take heed to you before they take heed to someone else that has no struggle of their that well at least that they know
Perceived
of.
struggle, yeah.
Yes. So I think that young educators like yourself definitely poured into me because I can relate to you and just not the color of my skin, but you take the time to pour into your students. I'm not saying that white teachers or professors don't, but they're at a very high level because, again, too, they don't understand us. So, they can't really, it's only a certain level that they can go to. And you can go above and beyond, I feel like, in that you'll always be an educator that they'll remember outside of like high school. They'll always remember Mr. Taylor. So, I think I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I talk real talk to these students. It's kind of hard when, like, I'm a strategic person and I know everything's a strategy, and race comes into play with everything, right? And we
Yeah.
have to factor that into our strategy when we are on our quest for success, right? But we don't. Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, she the late Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, she was like, we need to understand white supremacy from and teach it in our schools to our students. And I kind of and I listen to her lectures and things like that. I'm like, and I'm kind of seeing well, not kind of, I see what she was talking about. And we're so integrated now that we think everything is good sometimes, and we just go with the flow of things. And when it's still, you still have to use a strategy. I know that personally because I grew up in the culture, the white culture, and lived the black experience. And I mean, that makes me unique because I understand that culture more than my friends do because they grew up in all black high school. Even the college that we went to was, I mean, really diverse, more than a PWI or whatever. So they don't understand, and you only really understand a culture if you live in it or are amongst it for a long period of time. Like I grew up in it, and I'm seeing the differences in the friends that I had from elementary school when we played basketball to high school to now, and how they change and their views change, and I'm like, dang, we were just hooping the other day. Like, how you gotta Confederate flag in the back of your car? Like, you were
And
just
I
taking me
and
to school the other day.
right. And it's like now, I don't know if I want to, I don't know if we want to go into politics, but when the election came around, you'll be so surprised what people were supporting. And I'm like, wow, because I went to my first high school was pretty much a mixed high school. There were a lot of white kids there as well, so I was able to like be around them a little. So I, the ones that were against us, they kind of blatantly said it. Then you have some, those are kind of like under the table, like their parents taught them not to, well, not to like us, so then they know that they're wrong, and then so in front of their parents they may not, be around us, but then they love us. It's like weird. So I agree that when you said, what did you say? You said we may think things are all good, and I think the world, like, they paint it, whatever way they want to, and then they cover it up with all this other stuff that's going on. But the
Diversity
real
and
question
inclusion.
is,
Did I say that
and then
out
want to put a
loud?
right, and then they'll put an African American person in that position because they have
Exactly. And I'm like, I ain't,
to.
they ask me to be on it all the time. I'd be like, no, I ain't got time for helping y'all be humane. That's my go-to. And I've been trying to voice, not in the workplace, but on here and on my social media and stuff, and voice that, like, I'm not here to help white people be humane. I'm here to help Black people make a strategy for success. And if I had a queen right here that represents something, represents royalty at her university and holds herself to a higher standard, she had requirements that she had to meet. I want to give that to my students, that those ladies that are, I deal with the college credit students, and I want to deal with those ladies, and I'm like, this is how you carry yourself. This is how you walk through life. Like, you can't just think that. And I showed the young lady a meme of this girl was going off on social media that she got a internship or something at NASA, and she was like, y'all suck my whatever, and I got a and one of the board members was like, watch your language, and she was like, F you. I got an internship at NASA. She was like, and he was like, I'm on the board, and she lost her internship. I don't know if it's true or not, but
But that's a
it
perfect example.
yes.
As quick as you get something, you can talk your way up out of it, and I think that goes back to young men and women being cognizant of their surroundings. You should never throw in someone's face, what do you have? Because just that quick, if that was a true story and that man did sit on a board, you would never be able to work for NASA again. So
Ever.
I am like literally being in corporate, I am always aware of what I'm saying it again, how I want it to be heard, because I'm not here to impress y'all, but I am here for my own success. So I would never want to, disappoint myself or my family all because I'm throwing in someone's face what I have. Or just, that's to me, that's simply unladylike. Like I'm not gonna go cussing and say, oh, I'm doing, because then you're not as you said you work for the company or intern for the company, now you represent the company. So I'm just thinking, if I was an employer and I own that company, how would I want my employees to act, or how would I want them to represent our brand? So
And is it, and people are unique and we want to be ourselves. Is it not being yourself when you can't be 100% yourself? I don't know if that makes sense.
yeah,
But
I think
do
like
you know
not
what I'm
changing
saying?
yourself. Yeah, not changing yourself to like fit in, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, like understanding your surroundings. So when I'm at work, like I'm not about to cuss nobody out. I don't cuss in general, but like I don't necessarily share all of my viewpoints at work. Is that not being true to myself? Because
I'm not gonna
a lot
say.
of young people, they want to express themselves. This is the arts generation and stuff. They want to express
Yeah.
themselves, and I'm like, you can't express yourself everywhere.
Right. I definitely say that no, that's not you being yourself. I watch what I say. I watch what I say politically. I watch what I say, or really just how I say things, because you can really say something crazy in a nice way. I've learned. But
You probably a master at that,
I've learned, but I would say it's not you dimming your light. I think that you're more so protecting your light. Like, and that's me too. I used to be that person where, oh, I'm gonna say how I feel, but now I'm a little bit more wiser, and I respect my own peace. So I don't want nobody else to disturb it. So if I feel like necessary, of course, speak up. I will always do that. But if I feel like it's just another opinion that would not result to a solution, then I just say to myself as well. I definitely, I can agree right there, and I can definitely say that again, it's not you dimming your light, it's more so you just protecting yourself, because I mean, well, you don't have anything to owe anyone at work but your duties. After you complete your duties, you go home. You're not really owe, you don't have to owe, you don't owe a friend or anything at work. You don't owe your opinion to them. So I think, just being that, I mean, that's not being you. That's just protecting you more so than anything.
And I think in terms of success, and we'll get back to the book and being a queen here in a second, but I think in terms of success, you have to fly under the radar for a while. So that
Right.
you can get the knowledge that you need. Because if you don't own anything, you don't have nothing to go to. You are still dependent on that system and that job and everything that's around you. So, yeah, I might not be able to kiki with my friends like I do at home at work, you know what I mean? But I'm
You
looking
just
for
have
the
to know
long
your
term.
room.
Yeah, you gotta know your room, and you gotta understand, like I said, race plays a factor in the strategy for success. When you gotta you I'm in a room full of white people all the time. So they all have different perspectives of what I'm not that young, but young black male look is supposed to be like or whatever. So I can either tap into that or blaze my own path. And I'm going to act like I want you to act towards me anyways.
Right.
So, you know I can't act like my white male counterparts at functions that have alcohol or whatever. I can't act
Right.
like
Ooh, that's the one,
that.
Michael. You can't do the same thing that everyone else do. And I think
Right.
if the younger generation learned it, but I also think the younger generation, not that they don't want to work, I think that they're more they want to create their own lane, which is nothing wrong. I think we all do. I think we're just a little bit more cognizant of what it takes to get there. So like you said, staying under the radar. I always said, like, never change for the mainstream. If you're good enough, the mainstream will follow you. And also, you know, being that person that's, you know, in the weeds and working and striving, eventually you're going to be the boss. So I think that people, you know, they take what social media, and social media, don't get me wrong, social media is a love thing and a curse to me. I think that it spreads the word. You know, it's better than word of mouth. You know, just thinking about back in the day, our parents and stuff had to call each other just to, you know, get something across or
Write
go up to the
letters and
house.
stuff.
Right, exactly. I think it's helpful for businesses and podcasts just like yours to spread the word for others. But then I think it's like a size up app. Like you go in there, you're sizing yourself up with what the rest of the world is doing. Meanwhile, you can be doing whatever you want to do or the exact same thing and be so much further ahead. And I think that they take that as a distraction sometimes. I think we all do. You know, we take it as a distraction more than a tool, you know, a resource.
A resource. Man, I've been preaching that. We only 5 weeks into school. We are only 5 weeks into school. I just had to mention that. So
You
I
feel like
am
you're a month four or something.
I feel like we about to end the school year next week. That's how deep I think we is. Because I've been pouring out everything to these students, and I'm like, because I gotta lay the foundation. Like I, if it, because I don't have the success that they seek, you know what I mean? But I have a vast knowledge base. Like I don't want to call myself a guru, but like I'm a guru at everything that I do because I've been doing it for 10 years plus, everything. You know, I navigated the whole college process myself, master's degree, graduate assistant, double major, all of these different things. I played sports, like I did everything. I still do everything. So, like whenever I get a chance, I walk them through all of what life is going to get you. I graduated with my master's degree in the middle of the Great Recession. So jobs and stuff wasn't readily available, just like
Right.
with the pandemic.
Pandemic.
Like
Yeah. And see, I was so blessed. But I'm like a work I used to be a workaholic. Like right now I'm like, okay, let me do my job and log off. But honestly, I was so upset my senior year because I usually would have an offer letter by November. Like around this time, coming up in November, I would usually have an offer letter, and I didn't have one my senior year. I had interviewed with all these companies. I'm like, why don't they want me this year? Like, this is the year y'all been waiting on me to graduate. So I was still working and still applying everywhere. So the job I actually have now, it's like we went on spring break, and that week we came back, the world shut down in March. So I was so lucky to already have secured an interview with this company. And the week we came back from, we went to Vegas for our last spring break. But the week we came back, it was my birthday. And I interviewed on my birthday for this job. And that was also the day that they sent us home. And I think a lot of times college students, they wait till after spring break to get their life together. Oh, what am I going to do after college? And then that time period was taken away because of the pandemic. So I luckily had already had my offer letter that next week. He sent it over. But that just goes to show that you can't wait till the last minute, because anything can happen. Any obstacle can be in your way. So I think that if we learn to be proactive than reactive, that could probably do us a great deal
That's
with
what wealthy
success.
people. Wealthy people. I tell my students this for the past 5 weeks. Wealthy people have options. Poor people don't. And we're creating our future right now. You have an opportunity, no matter if you poor or not. You have an opportunity now because you're so young to kind of start creating those options for you. But if you don't take the necessary steps, you will be left in a silo and you will have to go one way.
And there's always going to be someone that's better than you. And you're always going to be better than someone. But if you keep striving, I literally don't quit. See us through. All the poems that we've been taught, I think, if students realize that there is only going to be one of you. So God has given you a gift that you can use in some way, form, or fashion. And that whether that is pouring back into people and fitness or educating, I think that if students find their niche and then go to college, I think that everything will work out for them. I definitely think. And then everyone, I don't like when people say that others are more successful than others because or hate, I'm gonna say that. Hate on other people because we all pretty much were afforded, well, I'm speaking for everyone around me. We were all pretty much afforded with the same opportunities. It's what you did with them. If you didn't take school serious, if you didn't take going to college serious, then I can't fault for what I have and what you don't have because we all started in the same boat.
You couldn't have said, I couldn't have said it better. Like it's and what I try to get to the students is, and we are stuck in a poverty mindset, and the poverty mindset doesn't allow us to consciously think ahead. We're still surviving. We're in survival mode.
Oh, yes, speak,
And
Michael.
that's what I understand. So I have to open up those possibilities, especially for the younger people when they have these opportunities. I mean, I work in a department, or in the College and Career Center, where we getting scholarships after scholarships after scholarships, and all you have to do is have the requirements, and our students have the requirements. But they like, oh, I don't know if I want to go there. I don't care if you want to go there. Just
Right,
fill out
go.
the paperwork.
You
We
sound just like me. Oh my goodness. I'm like, I don't care what it takes to achieve, do it. I don't care what you don't
Yeah.
want, do
And
it.
even if you don't know, you have that option. That starts your wealth process. You have that option. If you limit your option to what you know, you don't know nothing. Like, I talk to the students every day. Go
My
ahead.
line sister's mom, she told me this just recently. I was in Atlanta like a month ago, and she said, keep going to school until you know everything. She said, keep going to school until you know everything. But I also agree that we're still in the survival mode. I always tell people, I know I can speak for myself, that I was raised on survival. I wasn't really raised on love. So coming up, I was like, okay, I gotta get out of Memphis. And so now that I did get out of Memphis, now I'm like, okay, how do I create generational wealth for my family? How do I break these generational curses? How do I get out of this broken cycle, time after time, generation after generation? I think it goes, and I know that it goes back to,
Slavery, all
it, slavery. You know,
that stuff.
I wasn't trying to take it there, but you hit it my exact word. I think it goes back to slavery because it goes back to what your ancestors were taught. And I and you know,
And
no shame
the
to white people,
predicament
y'all.
that we were put in. We were put in that predicament.
Right.
And that's the stuff that I want to speak out on, but I can't because I'm in an environment that it's going to touch some people the wrong way. So I got to wait until this podcast, my books, and all of this stuff pop
Same.
off to be able to be like, hey, F you, I'm out. Like, I'm gonna tell you like George Bush told me.
And I think that, I just think it goes back to like how we were taught, and a lot of times during the elections and stuff, people were like, "Well, why are they doing that? Why are they doing that?" It was never built for us. That's why we're not considered. This land wasn't built for us, or this judicial system. It wasn't built for us. We were an outlier always. We're an outstanding action that they have to check off. So I think that once we realize that and we team up as a community and we put all our brains together, because we truly are, if you think about it, this country wasn't built for us, but we built it. So therefore, I think, if we just put our resources together and come together as one, we really can be enough for ourselves and not to depend on anyone else.
I agree with that, and I just want to put an and on there, not a but, and I just want to make that clear and straight. I want to put an and on that. So, and we need to, I think, go towards individual success right now at this point, because in 20 years, this country will be a majority minority country. Meaning that it'll be more brown people than there is white people. So if we concentrate and focus on individual family success and have that in the back of our mind as a strategy, not like this ain't just the end all be all, but as a strategy, we fly under the radar, right? We build up ourselves. We got people like you and me, trying to create generational wealth for ourselves. Focus on that, because in 20 years we will be able to come together and we will have the resources, even though like we don't have to do it right now, but as long as that's in the back of our mind, I gotta build, because there's no I in team, but there is me. So we have to concentrate on me first, because me takes care of the team, you know, and me is
And
a part of the team.
I definitely agree. That was a great end. And I think that, that applies even if you're talking a relationship. I think if people could, I think a lot of women and some men, they kind of look at a partner or whatever and try to rely on their success. But deep down, to be a true power couple or to be a true force together, you have to be successful individually. So that's something that I consider as well. That's the first thing that popped in my head when you said about that. But I definitely agree. If we could just focus on our household, get our household in order, and create some generational wealth for ourselves, and we'll come together automatically.
Automatically. So back to the book. Give us a snippet of what your chapter talks about, and just give us a snippet of what your chapter talks about. Are you
So
talking about in your chapter?
I tried to put or tried to be transparent as I could, and put as much as I could in 1500 words. It was so hard, but I basically did an introduction. I did my inspiration to lead, what led me to run. I also talked about the standard of Miss TSU, what you're kind of called to be on campus, whether that's being a female student mentor. I mean, a mentor to the female student body, I'll say that. And pretty much just being that first lady of campus I was talking about. And then I went into like how my experience was with my royal court. I talked about leading with love, and that chapter is I think a section of the chapter is pretty much the last section, I believe. And I did that because it's pretty much saying that your life is your reign. Of that chapter, you should be able to apply everything that I talked about to anything in life. I think that even just for your young students, they need to know that you don't have to wear a crown to be a queen or act like one. I think that your life is your reign. You cherish your reign, set your boundaries, and do what it takes to achieve. I think that a lot of times we get stuck on, or young ladies get stuck on, like, I'm not wearing that or I'm not doing that, but it's not really just about the glam, it's about the greater good, and again, that impact that you have.
So leave us with some encouraging words for our listeners, if you got any.
Yes. So I saw this quote a few weeks ago that said, "Obstacles are what you see when you take your eyes off the goal." So with that, it's like stay focused on your end goal and don't get distracted. So how I can apply that to the brain and to the book is when I ran from Miss TSU, I didn't care who I was running against or what they had or what they were giving away. I was focused on that crown, and that's solely we're not going to say solely how I got it, but a reason why I got it. So I think just focus on your end goal. Don't get distracted. And if you do, you're going to mess up. Don't regret it. Never regret a day, good or bad, because it taught you something. So that is my encouraging words. I think that everyone could just, today is today, yesterday was yesterday, and tomorrow's tomorrow. Just focus on your now. And what can you do now to help you succeed?
I appreciate the conversation tonight, and I want to make sure you get to
Yes, I start work so early. Oh my goodness. But thank you, Michael. I appreciate this. I really enjoyed talking. I know we went off topic, but
No, it's
it was a great
okay.
conversation.
Of course, of course. And I'll let you know when this drops and everything. So, have a good night, and I'll talk to you soon.
You as well. Wish you well. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Success is My Religion podcast. Go get the book. We are partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement for the HBCU Royal University Queen's Second Edition. It's coming out September 30th. Go get it.